We are privileged today to spend Thanksgiving with Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal, her husband, talking about the album they've put out together, in a way, called The List. And it's a perfect album for Thanksgiving. The themes of course, people gathering around family tables, and Thanksgiving actually being the true American holiday. And this new album, The List, is nothing but a history of American music. And we welcome Roseanne Cash to the cafe. Roseanne, good to have you here.
Thank you, David. It's good to be here.
I think we best set the scene of The List for people, because I think people are aware that your father, Johnny Cash, gave you this list. But maybe kind of set it up in your life, what was going on. I understand you had just graduated high school?
I had. And literally the day after high school, I went on the road with my dad. He just said, come with me and we'll travel around. And it was very appealing as an adventure. And it was that summer on the road with him that that I think I decided I wanted to be a songwriter. There was this kind of critical mass musical moment in my life that summer where he gave me the list. Helen Carter was teaching me how to play guitar and teaching me the Carter Family songs. And I thought, this is an honorable profession. And he gave me the list because we were sitting on the bus talking about songs, and he mentioned several songs that I didn't know. And he said he got kind of alarmed, and he spent the rest of an afternoon making this list for me. He called it 100 Essential Country Songs. And when he gave it to me, he said, this is your education.
Now, what music had you, obviously you've been exposed to a lot of music, but what, you know, here you are, teenager, what were you into at the time yourself?
Well, I was a Beatles freak, you know, as a pre-adolescent, I was president of my Beatles fan club, and I grew up in Southern California, and, you know, I listened to it was kind of pre and post Woodstock era, so I was listening to Buffalo Springfield, and Elton John and Spencer Davis and Janis Joplin, everything, you know, the late 60s, mid to late 60s, all the great bands then. So it's not only that. I mean, my mother was listening to Ray Charles and Marty Robbins, so that kind of went in, you know, by osmosis as well as my dad's music, of course. But I didn't choose country music then.
Mm-hmm. And so here you get this list, and did you know any of the songs at the time?
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, I couldn't have grown up without knowing Long Black Veil or Take These Chains from My Heart. You know, those kind of just were in the air around me. But there were a lot I didn't know. And, you know, it's this list has revealed itself over time to have so much depth and really chart the evolution of American roots music. You know, it wasn't strictly country. It was all the feeders into country music, too. Southern blues and gospel and early folk songs, Appalachian songs. It was a father's list, but it was also a musicologist's list.
I was just thinking about how amazing it is nowadays to make a list like this. You could Google all this stuff or whatever. Yeah. And he did this in an afternoon off the top of his head.
He did not Google. Yeah. You know, people express surprise about that. That's kind of the least surprising thing to me, because he had all of these songs at his fingertips. He knew literally thousands of songs by heart. So he just embodied them. They were like breathing to him.
Well, it's interesting how it is essential songs, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering if he had in mind essential performances of the songs of the time, because obviously he's a songwriter and he was always looking for songs too, so he had a real appreciation of that form.
Yeah, I was thinking about that myself, you know, and he was a songwriter and he made the list as a songwriter. But there comes a point in some songs where you can't separate the artist from the song, you know, or the definitive version of the record from the song. You know, that's a long conversation. But he did make the list as a songwriter.
Well, before we get back to the rest of the backstory on this album, Roseanne, let's listen to one of the songs, Merle Haggard's Silver Wings, which you perform on the new disc with Rufus Wainwright.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines. somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely.
We're talking with Roseanne Cash about the list, and we're going to be later on in the show getting a new list from her of songs that she would pass on to her daughter and son. And well, you know, here you have this 100 songs, and how did the idea for you and John to tackle this as a project come about?
This was really John's idea. I don't think I would have had the confidence or the courage to come up with this idea on my own. But in 2005, I found the list again. I had, you know, forgotten about it, put it in a box of letters and forgotten. And I had this new album out, Black Cadillac. And I was writing narratives for the Black Cadillac show because we had these films in the middle of the show. And so the second narrative I wrote was about the list because I had just found it again. So I wrote this thing, you know, when I was 18 years old, my father made for me a list of 100 essential songs. So that was in this little film in the middle of the Black Cadillac show. Well, everybody started coming up to me after the show saying, well, what about this list? You know, what else is on the list? When are you going to record the list? It was just absurd. And I wanted to make a covers record. And John said, you know, if you're going to make a covers record, the only record to make is the list. I said, no, I wouldn't want people to think I was exploiting my dad. He said, it's not about your dad, it's your list. And it started to sink in. Well, do you want to weigh in on that, John?
Yeah. I was going to ask John about, okay, here you have this idea to do this, but the aesthetics of doing this is something that comes between the two of you, with John, you know, working as a producer and musical hand on this. And you have to consider your background, Roseanne. You know, born in the South, grew up in Southern California, spent time in Nashville, but now you're a New Yorker. How do you consider all those elements, John, when you're getting ready to figure out what to do with these songs?
Well, you know, I like a challenge like that, David. It's the kind of challenge I really thrive on. So, having lived with Roseanne for 17 years, I mean, I've always, you know, been aware of this other side of her as a singer, separate from, you know, her being an artist or a songwriter necessarily. And I always intuitively felt she was made to sing material like this, and in some ways that she sort of avoided doing it. It's probably a long, complicated conversation as to why.
It's true, though.
But
yeah.
She avoided doing some stuff that I thought was naturally in where she had natural strengths. I thought this was a great idea. It was like a gift, you know? It was like a gift from her dad. He gave her the list, and these are great songs, deeply soulful songs with a lot of resonance. And the challenge, of course, was, well, how do you do it and have it be fresh? Because there's nothing less interesting than doing a covers record of well-known tunes where it's just boring, or are you trying to duplicate the original or replicate the original or whatever. So the challenge was, how do you do this and retain the spirit and give respect to the tradition of the songs and yet try to make them sound new, which is, you know, to me, that's a phenomenally fun challenge.
We did talk about this, you know, very specifically, that I couldn't just put on a costume of being a country singer because that's not just what I am. And I've, you know, lived in New York for almost two decades and been a songwriter for 33 years, and I grew up listening to the bands I mentioned earlier. So all of those sensibilities had to be brought to the table.
And also, one of the things that came out of this, just as a listener, I will say, is whatever, John, you all did with these songs together, the songs are never overpowered.
Well, that's good. Thank you. I mean, I think that's, you know, the goal of a good producer is to sort of balance all these balls, you know, of great arrangements, but keeping the singer central to the focus and also really keeping the integrity of the tunes intact. So it's good if we did that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that he and I both had a little bit of an academic approach to it, too, that the melodies were inviolable. We just didn't want to change the melodies at all. We could mess around with the arrangements, but not the melodies.
Well, that's not academic to me. That's just good arranging. Mm-hmm. I mean, the melody is the tune, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an academic exercise. That's just part of it. I mean, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And it wasn't, you know, it's like these are essential, quote-unquote, country tunes. But, you know, it wasn't... You know, what is country music? I mean, that opens up a whole other thing. To me, this is just soul music. It's just deeply soulful music. And my wife is a deeply soulful singer and just wanted to bring it out, you know.
Yep, you're right. A number of these have been recorded by Ray Charles. So there you go.
Yeah. And that, and in the shadow of modern sounds in country music loom large for me as an arranger and a producer.
Me too. It loomed large for me conceptually.
Right. I mean, that's a, you know... That is a deeply moving album, and we had zero desire to replicate what that album sounded like, because that's whatever. That's not that interesting to me. But there's some kind of deep soulful aesthetic going on in that album that was appealing to both of us, and we hope that we captured some version of it that made sense for Roseanne. You know?
Well, early on in the recording process, I told John, I said, if we can make even, you know, some kind of postmodern version of Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music, the Ray Charles record, that we will have succeeded, if we can even approach that.
I think that the shadow loomed largest on our version of Take These Chains From My Heart,
right,
which, of course, Ray did on that, and a deeply beautiful version. And I think that's the only cut on the album where it was sort of a nod to that early 1960s framework of how to do country music that Ray came up with.
Well, let's listen to what you did with that. This is Take These Chains From My Heart.
Take these chains from my heart and set me free. You've grown cold and no longer care for me. All my faith in you is gone, but the heartaches linger.
Take These Chains From My Heart, the version on The List, the new album that our guest today, Roseanne Cash, has out. We're talking with Roseanne and the album's producer, her husband, John Leventhal, about this music. And we mentioned, you mentioned the Ray Charles version of that. And I thought maybe in contrast we would take a little bit of listen to Ray's version of Take These Chains From My Heart.
Take these chains from my heart. Take these chains from my heart and set me free. You've grown cold and no longer care for me. All my faith in you is gone.
Take These Chains From My Heart, the Ray Charles recutting of the Hank Williams song, actually the last song that Hank cut, a song he did not write, which was not completely unusual for Hank, although he wrote most everything. And did you think about the Hank Williams version of this as well?
Yeah, we did. I mean, of course, we both knew those two versions very well, the Hank version and the Ray Charles version. And Hank was somebody that had to be represented on this record. On any list about country music, of course, you've got to have Hank Williams. So there were a couple people that we knew had to be represented.
Right. I think we knew without even saying it that we had to have something related to Hank Williams, something related to Jimmy Rogers, and something related to the Carter family. Like, that's kind of the fountainhead.
Yeah. If those three corners were held
right.
down, we could fill in the blanks.
Right.
Now, would your dad have put multiple songs by artists on there? Would there have been more than one Hank Williams song to choose from?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, we did try I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. It just broke my heart not to put it on the record. But John convinced me that it had just been done too many times.
Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal, our guests. More to come as we go through the list and get a new list from Roseanne as well, coming up on this special Thanksgiving edition of the World Cafe. I'm David Dye. This is The World Cafe. We're talking with Roseanne Cash about her new album, The List. Here is a World Cafe performance of one of the songs. It's Long Black Veil.
Ten years ago, on a cold, dark night, there was someone killed 'neath the town hall light. There were few at the scene, but they all did agree that the slayer who ran looked a lot like me. The judge said, "Son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you won't have to die." I spoke not a word, the wind mends my life, for I'd been in the arms of my best friend's wife. She walks these hills in the long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. Scaffold is high and eternity near. She stood in the crowd and shed not a tear. But sometimes at night, when the cold wind moans in a long black veil, she cries o'er my bones. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me.
Ooh. Thank you.
Our guests today, Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal, performing live at the World Cafe Live here in Philadelphia, a version of Long Black Veil. And we are spending the holiday with Roseanne and John talking about The List. And that song in particular, now Roseanne, obviously your dad cut a version of that. For most of our listeners, I'll bet the band version is the one that comes foremost to mind. Now, when your father picked these tunes, he didn't shy away from ones that he'd had some involvement with.
No, and in fact, I think there were certain songs he recorded because they were on the list. You know, it's a chicken and egg thing, but they were so important to his understanding of soulful country music and Southern music that they were essential. Long Black Veil, I think there is no list of country music without Long Black Veil. There certainly was no record of mine from the list without Long Black Veil. I knew that was one that there was no question about. We just had to do it. And even though there was no way to turn the gender around, that I didn't even hesitate about that. There's that old tradition in folk music of a woman singing about another woman, and it worked out fine for me. My dad's version, as you know, was on Live at San mm-hmm. Quentin. But the version that was most definitive to me was Lefty Frizzell's version.
And let's listen to a little bit of that.
10 years ago, on a cold, dark night, there was someone killed 'neath the town hall light. There were few at the scene, but they all agreed that the slayer who ran looked a lot like me.
The Lefty Frizzell version of that great song, The Long Black Veil. Roseanne, why that version in particular?
Well, I think because I had heard it first, in my childhood, and it just made a huge imprint. And then my dad's version, it's a little darker even more haunted. But it was kind of overlaid on top of the Frizzell version for me anyway in my consciousness. And then the band version, which I kind of thought, oh, well, you know, that's cool that the band is doing this great old song.
I love the band version. Actually, yeah. I love the Lefty Frizzell version. Yeah, there's a great story. Danny Dill, one of the songwriters, that if I got this right, he was giving an interview and he was saying this was the era where they pitched it to Lefty Frizzell like on a Monday, and he cut it on a Tuesday, and it was released on a Thursday, and it was a hit by the following Monday or Tuesday. Those days are gone.
It's interesting. That song, it sounds ancient in so many ways. I think it's the use of language in it, the way things are phrased, and even the tale. It could have been an older ballad too.
Oh sure. I mean, it's from that tradition of murder ballads. You know, all those great Appalachian murder ballads, but which is from a tradition of Elizabethan song. So it's from centuries of a ballad tradition.
I wanted to do another kind of contrast between versions of songs. We've got a version that you and John did at World Cafe Live of I'm Moving On. And before we do that, let's listen to the Hank Snow version of that one.
That big eight wheeler rolling down the track means your true loving daddy ain't coming back, 'cause I'm moving on. I'll soon be gone. You are flying too high for my little old sky, so I'm moving on. That big loud whistle as it blew and blew said, hello to the Southland, we're coming to you, and we're moving on. Oh, hear my song. You had the laugh on me, so I've set you free, and I'm moving on.
Some songs are so iconic that even the breaks in them are really yeah. well known. Now, that's what I call kind of a jukebox song. You would find that on every jukebox anywhere for years and years and years. And I guess Hank Snow's career kind of rested in many ways on that song. Now, John, how did you react to that version of it when you were doing it with Roseanne?
It's interesting. This was the song that was the key into the album for me, of how to sort of approach this, was how I sort of thought about deconstructing that. Because it was clear to me that we weren't going to kind of do it like Hank Snow, and we weren't going to do it with that language, with that kind of honky-tonk and, real hillbilly fiddle stuff, which we love. I mean, I love all that stuff, but, I just didn't feel the need for yet another version of it like that. So the big insight was sort of deconstructing it a little bit and thinking about Rose, who's so sexy to me. I just thought, well, that could be a sexy song. So the big insight was, well, what if we did it like Peggy Lee's Fever?
I didn't get it at first.
So that's kind of the way I'm wired. I can't help it. I'm like I'm a walking encyclopedia of a gazillion songs. And so a lot of times my wiring will cross the songs to see what happens. And that worked. I mean, literally within 3 seconds of that idea hitting my head, I was like, well, that works. Because it's basically just a blues. And then when she started singing it, I was like, oh, yeah, we're on to something here. So that really was the key into the album.
And Roseanne, you weren't so sure?
Well, I wasn't sure because of Hank's version. I thought, this doesn't make sense for a woman to sing. It just, it's to sing Big Eight Wheeler Rolling Down the Track. I have to do it either ironic or just completely deconstruct it, like John said.
No and, irony. We didn't see, we didn't want it. It's so and, easy to do this stuff and be ironic.
Yeah,
but
we
really,
didn't.
I was like, we love this stuff.
We love it. We cannot be ironic.
I want to make fun of it.
Right.
It's like,
so when he came up with this very sexy Peggy Lee thing, I thought, oh, okay, We could do that.
And plus, it forced her. I think it also was sort of, she realized that I wasn't fooling around. It was like, no, you're going to be the singer. You are the singer. Get in front of the band and you are singing and forget about your own tunes. And it's all about you as a singer. Because Roseanne has never really framed any recording project she's done in her 30-year career as that. It's like, well, I'm the singer.
No, I never did.
And that was really my goal. My goal for this album, David, was if people listened to it when they were done listening, if the first thought they had in their head was, God, I forgot about what a great singer Roseanne was, then I feel like I've done my job. And it seems like I may have just done exactly that.
Well, let's listen to a great singer. And the live version here certainly has all those elements you're talking about.
Big eight wheeler rolling down the track means your true loving mama ain't coming back. 'Cause I'm moving on, I'm rolling on. You were flying too high for my little sky, so I'm moving on. Big loud whistle as blue and blue said hello to the Southland, we're coming for you. When we're moving on, I'll soon be gone. You had the laugh on me and I've set you free, and I'm moving on. Moving on, John. You, baby, from time to time, but you just wouldn't listen or pay me no mind. So I'm moving on, I'm rolling on. You've broken your vow and it's all over now, and I'm moving on. Well, someday, baby, when had to play, you're gonna want your mama, but your mama will say, keep moving on, stay away too long. You had the laugh on me and I've set you free, and I'm moving on, moving once more. Big eight wheeler rolling down the track means your true love and mama ain't coming back. 'Cause I'm moving on, I'm rolling on. You were flying too high for my little sky, so I'm moving on, moving on. Moving on home.
I'm Moving On, recorded live on stage at World Cafe Live by the singer Roseanne Cash and the band John Leventhal, who are here with us today. We've got more coming up from the list on our Thanksgiving special here on the World Cafe. We're back talking with Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal about the list and getting a chance to hear some many different versions of these songs, originals, live ones, and recordings from the list proper. Here's something that I'm very proud to be able to play, which was a recording, Roseanne, that you did for the Country Music Hall of Fame a few weeks ago in September. And this was kind of the official debut night.
Right, it was.
Tell me about it. What was going on?
Well, the Country Music Hall of Fame wanted to present this, premiere of the list live. And, oh, my God, I was so nervous. It was so exciting. It was such a big deal. Hank Cochran, who wrote She's Got You, which is on the record, was there. Paul Hampton, who co-wrote Sea of Heartbreak, was there. You know, so many people who were somehow Harold Bradley was there. Somehow connected to the original recordings of these songs. It was so thrilling. And then just to be in the Country Music Hall of Fame, to know that upstairs so many artifacts from my own family were archived there, it was a really special night.
Well, this is that recording of She's Got You.
Picture that you gave to me, and it's signed with love, just like it used to be. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got your picture, she's got you. I've got the records that we used to share. They still sound the same as when you were here. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got the records, she's got you.
She's Got You from the Country Music Hall of Fame, a recording by Roseanne Cash. She and John Leventhal are our guests today. Now, here you go. Here's a song where there is a performance of this, and it's by another woman. It's by Patsy Cline. That has got to be something you have to think about.
Oh, she didn't want to do it.
I didn't want to do it. It was so... I mean, Patsy was on my shoulder. I had her version in my head so front and center that it was very hard to get around. And John kept pushing me, to his credit, you know, he kept pushing me to do it. Once I got into the center of the song, I kind of thought, you know, it's been a really long time since that Patsy Cline record was out. There's probably a lot of people that don't remember it. And a great song deserves more interpretations.
I mean, to me, she was born to sing that stuff. So, I mean, I don't know what that was all about on her part. I really
some
don't.
Deep
I'm like,
psychological.
What are you talking about? Get in there and sing the damn song. Jesus, it sounds great. That was fun because we sort of, in my mind, I was kind of reimagining it as this kind of 60s pastiche with slight kind of churchy chord changes, but still kind of almost, I don't know, like almost like a Dusty Springfield thing or something. I don't know where I was coming from.
We have another recording from that same night, and I wanted to get this in here because I love your version of this, and it is actually the oldest piece on there because, of course, I don't think people really completely understand that Jimmy Rogers was kind of America's first rock star. He was so amazingly popular, and Miss the Mississippi and You, of course, one of his best-known tunes. Let's listen to the version from the Country Music Hall of Fame.
I'm growing tired of the big city lights, tired of the glamour and tired of the sights. And all of my dreams I am roaming once more.
Jimmy Rogers tune, Miss the Mississippi and You, from the Country Music Hall of Fame, a song that was on the list, is on the album The List, and that is a version that Roseanne Cash cut with the band, and we're very happy to be able to play that for you. Let's remind people of the original, and let's play the Jimmy Rogers version of that.
I'm growing tired of the big city.
it is light. Tired of the glamour and tired of the sights. In all my dreams I am roaming once more back to my home on the old river shore. I am sad and weary, far away from home.
Jimmie Rodgers, original of Miss Mississippi and You. And you listen to that, it doesn't necessarily scream country music. It kind of sounds like a Tin Pan Alley song.
I think it was.
Yeah. You know, I just heard something in that his recording for the first time I've never heard before. He actually made city possessive. He said big cities lights. And I didn't.
Oh, God, let's recall
that.
We
have to go back and fix it.
Remaster, recut, remix.
It's interesting the role he has in American music, which is he's known as the father of country music. But on the other hand, he certainly transcended, shall we say. He crossed over.
Well, country music as we know it did not exist then when he was around, and he was hugely important to my father, so we knew he had to be represented on this record.
Hugely important to all those guys of your dad's generation.
Yes.
I mean, they all revered him. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard Merle Haggard's tribute record to Jimmie Rodgers, which is a phenomenal record.
I did want to try Waiting for a Train. John and I, we spent a morning trying that. But that one, you just couldn't change the gender on it. Just didn't make sense.
Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal talking about The List. More next hour, including Roseanne's new list for her daughter. The World Cafe is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. This show is produced at WXPN from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm David Dye. This is The World Cafe. I'm David Dye, and this is The World Cafe. Singer Roseanne Cash and her producer and husband John Leventhal are joining us today to take a closer look at her new album, The List. The record features covers chosen from a list of essential country songs that Roseanne's father, Johnny Cash, gave her as a teen. Here is a live World Cafe performance of one of those songs, Girl from the North Country.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fair, the wind is heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. If you go when the snowflakes storm, when rivers freeze and summer ends, see, she has a coat so warm to keep her from the howling winds. Darkness of my night. in the brightness of my day. So if you're traveling in the North Country Fair, where the wind's hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. She once was true love of mine,
Bob Dylan's song, Girl from the North Country, recorded live at World Cafe Live by our guest today, Roseanne Cash. She and John Leventhal are here to talk about the songs that are on the list. And we left off last hour with the oldest song on the list, and that is the newest. It's interesting, Roseanne, that this list was from, well, I guess it was 1973, right?
Right, 73.
And there you have a relative, I mean, that would be a song that is certainly connected with your father. The definitive, one of the definitive versions of it is certainly the one that he and Dylan cut together. But it's interesting that there weren't any newer songs.
Or is it? You don't know that there aren't.
Okay.
I haven't revealed the whole list yet.
Right.
The Girl from the North Country is the newest song on my record.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it's also a song from the ballad tradition. The version that was most kind of in my mind was my dad and Dylan's duet. And I was 14 when that came out. And I even had images of them doing that song. So it was very hard for me to think about doing it. And again, John, you know, it sounds like I'm resisting half the songs on the record.
You were. You were. It's a lot of work for me.
It was a lot of work for me.
Is that coming through?
But he's John.
A lot of work here.
John said, let's listen to Bob's original version. And immediately I went, oh, of course. It's from that great tradition. It's almost Elizabethan or Appalachian. Right.
I mean, I always loved Bob's. I mean, you know, really, Bob and John's version is essentially a completely different song than Bob's
original version,
except the lyric is the same. But the harmony, the chord changes, and the melody are quite different. And Bob's original version is so haunting. I don't know. I think there's a clip of it in the Scorsese documentary of Bob singing it on some Canadian TV show. From the 60s, and there's a set where it's like all these like lumberjacks out in the woods, all these men in a log cabin, and Bob is sitting there singing it, and it's unbelievable. It is so deep, so haunting, so timeless. It's like, where did this kid come up with this song? Because he's only like 22 or 23.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true lover man.
We're talking with Roseanne Cash about the list. Now, was Dylan a shared interest with you and your dad at the time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, he and Dylan were friends. They carried on a many years correspondence. They had a lot of respect for each other.
Absolutely. Well, one of the first things that a lot of people had a chance to hear from the list was the version of Sea of Heartbreak that you had a chance to sing with Bruce Springsteen. But I would like to start this little segment talking about this with listening back to the original Don Gibson, because it's really interesting how you guys took this song from this original. And this is a wonderful, wonderful version. But let's listen to the Don Gibson version of Sea of Heartbreak.
lights in the harbor. Don't shine for me. I'm like a lost ship adrift on the sea. Yeah, the sea of a heartbreak, lost love, loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine. How I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears.
The original Don Gibson version of Sea of Heartbreak. And tell me about including this one. You mentioned actually a little bit off mic that this was the first thing you tackled.
It was the first song that I started performing live. I actually did it in the Black Cadillac show in that segment where I talked about the list and said, here's a song from the list. And we did it very different live, actually.
We were doing it live sort of based on the Don Gibson version, which we love. So we were sort of fun to do that live. It's a lot of fun to play.
Yeah. So when, we were doing Sea of Heartbreak before I even knew I was going to make a record called The List. And then when we started the record, clearly that was the first one that we knew we were going to record. And John wrote, I think, four different arrangements for Sea of Heartbreak, 3 to 4. And he kept going back, and it would be really good but not quite right, really good but not quite right. And then he was in the studio late one night, and he came home and he said, I've got it. And he played it for me, and I teared up. It was so beautiful, and we both knew it was perfect.
Now, was it always a duet, or did it start out as a solo?
Oddly enough, my recollection is we did not start this project at all with thinking about, these guest singers. We didn't.
We didn't.
But some songs we heard, and we thought, well, this would have a good harmony. And then it was sort of like, well, who could sing harmony on it? We sort of played a little game, and this one was like, God, wouldn't Springsteen sound great in it? Because he has that kind of deeply romantic, yearning quality to his voice when he wants. And then we thought, well, what the hell? Let's ask him.
It's funny. The first time I listened to it, I just popped the record on my iPod, and I was listening, and I had not read anything about it, and I was going, wow, how did Roy Orbison get on this?
he channels that, doesn't he? He's got that thing.
You're not the first person to say that, and I thought it myself, too. It's like, is that – he sounds like a cross between Orbison and Don Gibson, and then, of course, himself with that classic American romantic voice.
Why? Did you leave me? Always to sail sea of heartbreak, lost love, loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine. I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, sea of heartbreak.
Sea of Heartbreak from The List. We're talking with Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal about making The List and some of the ideas behind the songs. And we mentioned at the beginning that, Roseanne, you've put together a list for your offspring. In fact, it's interesting, in the liner notes to the album, you talk about this album being the beginning of their list. So
yeah.
I guess you've been doing a little bit thinking about that.
Well, one of my daughters is a musician, and it looks like our 10-year-old son could possibly go that direction, too. But my daughter Chelsea's first record came out just a few weeks ago, and she asked me, she called me shortly after my record came out and said, where's my list? So she had been thinking about it, and I hadn't at that point. It was... So I've started thinking a lot about this, and definitely there would be an overlap between my list and my dad's list, but there are a lot of songs since 1973 that I would have to put on my list.
Well, we'll find out at least another installment in the list when we return here to the World Cafe. Roseanne Cash is our guest today. She and John Leventhal have put out a wonderful album of the list of songs from her father's list for her. And boy, this is nothing but about family and legacy. And as you mentioned, your daughter making music now. And what were the criteria for songs that you wanted to put on your list for her?
Well... part of it was a visceral criteria. Like, if it's a song that no matter how many times I've heard it, if it comes on the radio or it comes up, that I have to stop and listen to it again, that it's that compelling, that it's always interesting, it always draws me in. And then part of it, you know, I had to step back and be objective. Well, there'd have to be Springsteen, there has to be Dylan, you know, in the same way that there had to be Long Black Veil on my dad's list. There has to be the Beatles on my list. And, you know, I think I would tend more towards rock and soul than my dad did. But like I said, there would be an overlap of country. So I started thinking about this and, you know, came up with five or six for you, David, just to begin with.
Well, we are honored. And of course, you mentioned Bob Dylan. And boy, that's a tough one to pick. I mean, what song?
Yeah, which Dylan song, right?
Not possible.
It's really, I think John's right, it's not possible. But I did pick Like a Rolling Stone because it's so definitive. And so many other songs, I think, were influenced by Like a Rolling Stone. And the dense lyrics, dense poetry, I would have to say, and just that feeling of abandon, it just kind of was a watershed moment in songwriting.
Like a Rolling Stone, one of the famous, most famous drum beats in rock and roll, and one of the greatest songs. It's on the list, the new list that we we have asked Roseanne Cash to put together for us. And you mentioned Bruce, and you have exactly the same problem with Bruce. Is, you know, what song to pick, what era, what period, and what did you come up with?
Well, I chose Born to Run because it is one of those. There's very few songs that I remember where I was, what I was wearing, who I was with, what I was drinking, you know, what time of day. And hearing Born to Run for the first time was, I don't know how to describe the moment without using too many superlatives, but it made a permanent imprint on me. I was sitting at the Hard Rock Cafe in London, 1976. And I had been hearing about Bruce Springsteen, and there's so much fuss about him, and he'd been on the cover of Time, and, you know, I hadn't heard him yet, and the song came on. I was drinking Dubonnet on ice. It was so pathetic, but I was.
Wait a minute. I have to reevaluate my whole sense of who you are now. Dubonnet on ice.
Yeah. Okay. It was crazy. But, and, you know, clearly this is a song that also influenced a lot of songwriters afterwards. But if there was ever a song that was purely testosterone driven, this would be it, I think.
And yet so sensitive.
Sensitive. It's like William Blake if he were born an American and was in, you know, Rebel Without a Cause.
Sprung from cages on Highway 9.
That's Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen, one of the first two songs on Roseanne Cash's list for her children. Hear more of her selections, including one of her father's songs, after the break. We're back with songs that we've asked Roseanne Cash to put together for a list that she would pass on of important songs. And as her father's list that he gave to her was sort of folk and country music, we're certainly going into some other territory on this list. And what would you like to play next?
Well, I think I'll go to my dad because he was very modest and didn't include much of his own music on the list. Maybe he thought he was still too recent, you know, to he was a working artist and had to wait a while. But if it would also be equally hard to choose one of my dad's songs, but I think I would choose Big River, because it, to me, it's one of the greatest pieces of Southern poetry that's been written. And it's so cinematic, and it travels, which I think there are so many great songs that have travel in them. And he moves straight down the Mississippi River in this song, and everything is so clear. And it's also very testosterone-fueled, you know? It's about the chase. It's about pursuit. And he never gets her.
You're liking a lot of songs with testosterone in
them. I do. I actually like that very much.
And DuBonnet and the Rocks.
Now I taught the weeping willow how to cry, and I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky, and the tears that I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, Big River, and I'm gonna sit right here until I die.
Big River, the Johnny Cash contribution to his daughter Roseanne Cash's list, as we are exploring some additions to a list, a new list perhaps for her offspring. And you know, it's interesting. We're making kind of jokes about the testosterone fueled nature of a lot of these songs. Were there many women's songs on the original list?
Well, not nearly as many as men, but you know, partly that's because there weren't as many women songwriters,
right? Well, you've included a female songwriter on your list, Bobby Gentry.
Bobby Gentry, she wrote one of the classic pieces of Southern American poetry, I think, in Ode to Billy Joe.
Well, we have an incredible version that you and John had a chance to cut for us at World Cafe Live, and let's listen to that.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. She said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Then Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, well, Billy Joe never had a lick of sense, pass the biscuits, please. Oh, there's another 5 acres in the lower 40 I got to plow. And Mama said it was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Then Brother said he recollected when he and Tom and Billy Joe had put a frog down my back at the Carroll County Picture Show. And wasn't I talking to him after church last Sunday night? I'll have another piece of apple pie. You know, it don't seem right. I saw him at the sawmill yesterday, up on Choctaw Ridge. And now you tell me Billy Joel's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Then Mama said to me, child, what's happened to your appetite? Well, I've been cooking all morning, you haven't touched a single bite. Oh, that nice young preacher, Brother Taylor, stopped by today. Said he'd be pleased to have dinner on Sunday. Oh, by the way, he said he saw a girl, looked a lot like you, up on Choctaw Ridge. And she and Billy Joel was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Now a year has come and gone since we heard the news about Billy Joel. And Brother married Becky Thompson, they bought a store in Tupelo. There was a virus going round, Papa caught it and he died last spring. And now Mama doesn't seem to want to do much of anything. And me, I spend a lot of time picking flowers up on Choctaw Ridge and drop them into the muddy water off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Roseanne Cash's version of Ode to Billy Joe, no strings, but some amazing guitar playing from John Leventhal on that. And that is a song that Roseanne Cash has put on her list, and we'll include her version of that. So there you go. We've got time for a couple more of your songs, and what else would you like to do?
Well, I have to include you too. You know, there was no you too when my dad's list was made, and they have been such an important force in music, as goes without saying. But to me, they are kind of what gospel music is. They're so deeply spiritual, and that so much of their work feels like an elegy to me, or a hymn in rock terms, you know. And I love that about their work. And I would have to choose, if I chose one song, I'd have to choose one for a lot of reasons, what I just mentioned, but also it has one of the greatest lines in rock music to me, which is, have you come here to play Jesus to the lepers in your head?
Have you come here for forgiveness? Have you come to raise the dead? Have you come here to play Jesus to the lepers in your head? Did I ask too much? More than a lot. You gave me nothing, now it's all I got.
U2's One, another song on a special list that Roseanne Cash has made for us today. And we have time for one more to finish up this Thanksgiving special. And Roseanne, what would that be?
Well, I'm going to finish up with Marvin Gaye, a little social commentary, a little soul music. What's going on?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
Yeah. Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. What a nice way to finish up a Thanksgiving Day special of songs on a couple of different lists. That from a list that our guest Roseanne Cash has put together of songs that would be essential to pass on to yet another generation, and there's so much about legacy. This whole project, Roseanne, I mean, it's about family, but because it's your father, it is about a larger legacy. And
right.
Will there come a time in the future where we find out more about the list?
Yeah, you know, I mean, literally the moment we finished making this record, I turned to John and said, I want to do volume two. And he said, can we just get this one out first? So we are thinking about doing volume two and, you know, eventually doing the right thing with the actual list, which is, you know, as you said, it's not just a personal legacy, it's a cultural legacy too. But so it should be archived properly at some point.
Roseanne Cash. Thanks to Roseanne and John Leventhal for joining us. Support for the World Cafe is provided in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and also by the members of the World Cafe affiliates nationwide. The show is produced at WXPN from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm David Dye. Happy Thanksgiving, and thank you for listening. This is the World Cafe from NPR, National Public Radio.